You are now listening to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program.
Another thing about a shark, he's got lifeless eyes. Black eyes, like a doll's eye. When he comes at you, he doesn't seem to be living until he bites you. And those black eyes roll over white and then...
Full of Dicks internet radio program. I am Mike. I'm joined, of course, by my good friend, Mr. Drunkard STL on the Twitters.
Dolly.
Also here, Mr. Party Travis.
It's party time. Excellent. I'm happy to be doing a show here on National Filet Mignon Day.
Hey, is it really?
What happens on National Filet Mignon Day,
Travis? I think we celebrate filet mignons.
Are they on sale somewhere?
I stopped at the grocers and did not see any filet mignon on sale.
So would it be sacrilege to run a filet mignon through like a grinder and eat it as a hamburger?
Ooh, no, that'd be delicious.
Okay. Guys, also Matt's here. Hello, Matt. I hope you're well. I hope you're doing okay. Matt, my friend Matt, who's also here.
Matt.
Na-na-na-na.
Matt.
The guy's phone number to contact the show, 636-487-HAND or WFOD show on Skype. Guys, we have one hell of a show for you tonight. There's so much to discuss.
Oh, don't oversell it.
Oh, entertainment Matt's here. Galore.
Hi, Matt. Matt, I hope you're well.
I'm great, buddy. I am so great. I am here. It's Tuesday night, 9 o'clock. And we are doing the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program. Back to you in the studio.
I'll throw it over here to the Wisconsin correspondent to let you know I'm also happy that Matt's here and that we're doing a show and everything is going very smoothly. Thanks a lot. Back to you, Mike.
Drunk, anything to add?
Are you having a stroke?
Am I?
67 degrees tonight. It's going to be partly cloudy. Chance
you had
of showers
a look on your face for a second.
Overnight. But other than that, it's going to be a humidity of 86%. Slight wind chill. That's it. Back to you, Mike.
After the break, we will have a special guest, actor, comedian Connor Ratliff, here to promote his new podcast on Earwolf, Dead Eyes. That we're really looking forward to speaking with Connor. Okay, back to you, Mike.
Back to you, Matt.
WNBC.
Hey, Travis. Buddy.
I believe it's WFOD.
Pal, Travis.
Mia Khalifa made the news this week when she announced that she only made $12,000 during her entire pornography career.
Which was
and
only
I can
three
say
months,
that
by the way.
I think that I might have made more money in my porn career than she did. Back to you, Mike.
Travis, in 1994, Trent Reznor, he's the main guy in a group called Nine Inch Nails. You heard of Nine Inch Nails?
He did the soundtrack for that Facebook movie.
He did, yeah. He does a lot of soundtrack work.
Ooh,
now.
That's a good soundtrack.
He did the one for the girl in the web too. He did that one. But in 1994, he wrote a song and the lyrics, Travis, it's I want to fuck you like an animal.
Ooh, that is crude.
I want to feel you from the inside. Ugh. I want to fuck you like an animal. My whole existence is flawed. You get me closer to...
Boy, could you imagine if they did something like that on Kidz Bop?
I want to fuck you like an animal. My
Travis, I thought this one was a little too on the nose, and so I avoided it, but it has been requested multiple times. The people
are requesting this?
Yes, yes, Travis. The people, they want to know, can you kids bop that shit?
Kids bop that shit! Well, I do have to say that, man, that is a crude song, and I wouldn't even let my kids listen to the radio edit of that. So, yeah, I think I can kids bop that shit. I really love you and your animal. I want to walk you both inside. I really love you and your animal. At your assistance, we'll walk you, me, and your boxer named Todd.
So the boxer, his name's Todd?
Boxer's name is Todd. He's the animal. Great dog.
Travis, I'm glad.
Big fan of that.
I'm glad that we got that out of the way. Travis, are you familiar with the musician Mike Posner?
Mike Posner? No, that doesn't ring a bell.
Matt, I mean, you know about the music. Are you familiar with Mike Posner at all? He does a pop music. I flipped through his songs, and there was only one that I recall ever hearing. I pulled a clip. This is Mike Posner. Maybe you guys have heard this song.
I say, I don't know this guy.
If I could write you a song to make you fall in love, I would already have you up under my arm.
Ring a bell? No?
Was this gentleman in a boy band?
I do know this song.
I used the ball.
I don't know that song.
I hope that you like this, but you probably won't.
I imagine he falls into that category of... Who is that guy? Ryan Cabrera? Like that kind of...
I like that guy.
White guy, you know, singing about falling in love and all that shit. And it's
like
just
a Jason,
really
like a Jason,
standard.
Jason Mraz.
You just took the words right out of my mouth. In my head, I'm thinking Jason Mraz in my head. So.
He does a lot of songs that feature hip hop guys. Like the hip hop guys like do a verse on his song, but
sure.
He is not a hip hop guy. He is a poppy fellow.
I mean, isn't that how most pop is nowadays, though?
Now, all the things that I've seen, and you'll understand eventually, he does have a big, bushy beard now. See, Matt, what's happening, and I like this. It's cool. It was a fun idea while it lasted.
So it's Jason Mraz if he looked like a Mumford & Sons guy.
Kind of, yeah. That's a very good description, Drug. In
good.
April, he started walking across America. He started in the ocean in New Jersey and just said, I'm going west.
Forrest Gump style.
Similar, like just, yeah. And every time he enters a...
So does he have somebody follow him? And?
Yeah. Somebody's following him and making videos. And every time he enters a new state, he celebrates by releasing a new song off of
what will
eventually be his new album. So he's been doing this since April. And on day 116, he had just got into Colorado, and he was bit by a rattlesnake.
Ouch.
That's what you get.
He got bit by a rattlesnake?
Yeah.
Their mountains?
Yeah. So they
Or was he in the flatland?
They rushed him to the hospital. They had to give him the anti-venom, Matt. He's not going to walk anymore because...
Do we know what kind of rattlesnake this was?
They almost had to cut off his foot because this rattlesnake bit him.
It was that bad?
Apparently. Yeah, I mean, he
so
might
they're
have
not
been
gonna dramatizing
they're
not gonna drive him back to the spot where he was bit?
Dude, he's got to commit. Drive him back to the spot.
So
he made a promise to these people.
I don't care if the rattlesnake's still there or not.
If it was that bad, I'm going to go ahead and assume it was a baby rattlesnake.
Are baby rattlesnakes worse than regular rattlesnakes?
Yeah, because, you know, adult rattlesnakes, they know how to conserve their venom for when they need a for-sure kill shot. Baby rattlesnakes just
so what,
right,
they,
right for it.
They pop you once as a warning?
Kind of, yeah.
Maybe they were really pissed off.
If they really felt threatened, yeah.
Yeah.
But babies, they don't know to do that.
Right.
Babies
unleash
the whole...
Whole injection.
Yeah, they'll just give you the whole caboose of what they got. So
baby's like, fuck this guy. I won't be tried as an adult.
So I wonder if he
did he make it through Missouri?
Did they kill the rattlesnake?
He did. He was all the way to Colorado. I don't know. Do you think they chased it down and killed it?
Well, I mean, he could have went through a different route.
Because once they get that taste, Matt, you know, once they get that taste, yeah.
That human flesh in their mouth.
You don't want that thing living out there in the wild because now it's scheming.
Yeah, it's got that taste and it ain't going back. I mean, it just wants to kill.
Yeah.
You know what I'm saying?
Kill the white man.
Matt.
Yes.
Buddy. I had an idea. What I did the other day, I went to Papa John's for lunch.
And love Papa John's.
See, I got me a medium pizza for lunch.
What'd you put on that bad boy?
Was it a mistake?
So what I got, Matt, is I got half pepperoni, half meatballs.
Okay.
Why?
I don't know.
That's kind of really strange.
Well, I mean, I used to get sausage, but then I saw that they had meatballs.
No, but are you sharing this with somebody?
Well, Matt, no. See, I ate the pizza.
I just go
for yourself.
Pepperoni.
Yeah, I ate the pizza, man.
Did they give you the dipping sauce?
But I was thinking.
Of course.
I'm asking you a question.
Hold on a second.
I didn't. I ate
don't
it in my car.
Don't gloss over this weird shit.
So I didn't.
Yeah, you can't gloss over the fact that you bought a half and half pizza for yourself.
Yeah, I wanted to eat a little bit of both.
But so you get a fucking pepperoni meatball pizza.
Yeah, right. Slash meatball, not half and half.
The deal is for one topping.
So you pay the extra $1.50 and call it.
But you still got two toppings.
Yeah, but a half and half.
No. What?
Matt,
they only charge you for one topping if you get half on one and half on the other.
Yeah, of course.
One topping on the pizza.
No, that's what he's saying is fact. He's not wrong.
Have you argued with them about that?
Call Papa John's right now because I don't believe this at all.
Maybe in your neck of the woods, but here.
What do you not believe, Matt?
They
charge you for two toppings if you get half.
No, they don't.
It's a half pepperoni, half meatball pizza. That's one topping pizza.
Yeah, that's one topping on each half of the pizza.
No.
For a total of one topping.
Two separate toppings. It doesn't say put one topping on one half, one on the other. It says this is the pizza. If you want another topping, you pay for that topping.
Mike, if you don't get fucking Papa John on the phone right now, I don't care how racist he is. I need to know this isn't a thing that
have you. This can't be standard practice across all Papa John's.
Have you two never ordered a half and half pizza before?
You guys are
just arguing to argue. I have a great idea.
No, I'm not arguing to argue. I've ordered a half and half pizza because whoever I'm with, the other person that I'm sharing the pizza with, wants something other than what I want.
Well, if they overcharged you, you got jobbed, basically.
Matt, I don't need a full medium pizza. I ate the whole pizza because it was there. But I don't need it.
The reason I asked my question is because the last three times I ordered Papa John's, I got no garlic sauce. And that's the whole reason.
A pizza that's place bullshit. Medium pizza is a lot of pizza for one person
to eat.
Did
you get the little pepperoncinis drunk?
No pepperoncini, no garlic sauce. And that's kind of like 80% of the reason you order Papa John's, right? Is the garlic sauce?
No, it's the only reason you order Papa John's. The garlic butter sauce is amazing, right. And you get the little pepperoncinis.
It's like Toppers is the same way. If you've ever had Toppers pizza, the garlic sauce is the only reason.
The last three times, no garlic sauce.
Guys, listen to my idea.
Okay. So
vats of garlic sauce to buy and have at home.
So you have an application where you throw it out there into the ether that you want a pizza, but you're just one guy on his lunch break at work. You don't need a whole pizza.
I mean, I kind of beg to differ on that.
It's like Tinder, but for sharing pizzas.
No.
Fuck you, Mike.
Nope.
You just tell people, hey.
Nope, I'm
like,
not down
about
with this
this
idea.
Time.
Nope.
I'm going to want a pizza.
I don't need somebody else's greasy fingers all over my pizza. Fuck that.
I just eat the pizza the next day if I have leftovers.
Yeah, no shit. There's not. What are you talking about, Mike?
I don't need all this extra pizza, man. I don't need to eat. See, if it's there, I'm going to. That's the problem when I go to dinner with my wife. My wife doesn't eat all her food, and then I eat her food,
too. A worse business idea than MoviePass, but you found it.
The pizza share. The
no.
pizza
why don't
share
you,
app.
No,
when you
no,
go
no,
there,
no, no,
why don't you take half the pizza no. and throw it directly in the garbage?
That's a waste of pizza, Travis. But I don't need it. I don't need it, and I don't want it.
Why didn't you just order a small then?
But like maybe there's another guy like me who wants some pizza.
No.
But
then
like
they can order their own fucking pizza.
But then they're just going to eat the whole pizza, drunk.
This is the most terrible idea I've ever heard.
No, drunk. I've had worse ideas, and this is good.
I'm not having some stranger share a fucking pizza with me.
No. I mean, yeah, like you're not going to sit there and hold hands and eat pizza together. Like you're going to take your half of the pizza and go your separate
way. And where is he? So what's he going to hold it in? You're the one that has the fucking pizza box.
Like, right. You know, like Papa John's is and all these restaurants, they've sanctioned all kinds of outside third-party apps. Like, why is Jack in the Box advertising for DoorDash? Why are they doing that? Why don't they just hire a guy to drive for them? Eventually, when everyone gets DoorDash on their
phone... Because they don't want the responsibility of staffing and
insurance.
Paying for insurance and all of that. They're like, okay, listen, you're going to handle all the delivery aspect for it? Great. You take care of it. I don't want anything to do with it.
But they're putting those stickers on their door. They're saying, use this. This is great.
Yeah, because... It's a great way for them to get their food out to the people and
then
the stoners.
Everyone's going to get DoorDash on their phone, and they're going to get used to it. And then DoorDash is going to be like, fuck Jack in the Box. We make food now.
Okay, well, except DoorDash's food will probably go.
DoorDash doesn't want the responsibility of having the overhead of building a fucking restaurant
Not yet, Matt, but once they have all of those, that data, that sweet, sweet
data.
The
only reason you're using DoorDash is to get Jack in the Box, not get whatever the crap is that
or Hooters.
DoorDash is made.
If I want Hooters wings,
right. So Papa John's.
Well, first of all, they're fucking delicious. Yes,
the Papa John's. They have a situation,
the worst wing,
where they could probably get more people to come if they didn't sell such a gigantic product. Like
but they wouldn't make any more money if you're splitting a pizza with another person. They'd make the same amount. It'd be more people. But it would make the same amount of money.
It'd be more people coming in and buying pizza.
That and Papa John's makes a small, order a fucking small. Why did you order the medium?
There isn't.
Because the deal's on the medium.
So you're going to meet up with some stranger.
And if you can't eat it, you save it for the next
half day. Half pepperoni, half meatballs.
Some stranger's going to meet you in the parking lot. You're going to open the box and be like, all right, take your half and be on your way.
Well, no, I mean, Papa John's is in on it. They'll just give us both our own box. They split the pizza.
That costs more money for Papa John. They're not into that.
Yeah, Papa's not into that. They don't want it. This convenience means nothing to them.
Yeah,
they, in fact, want you, the two different people, to buy two medium pizzas.
Right.
Yeah, they want
want you guys splitting a medium pizza and giving you an empty box.
Then they're going to be accused of not being like environmentally friendly because they're using more boxes for the same pizzas.
They want that, but think of all the pizza that they're missing out selling because people are like, that's
I mean,
too-
Mike, where were you when you came up with this idea?
Yeah. I was at Papa John's getting my medium pizza back.
With your fucking half and half. Why didn't you just say, like, give me half pepperoni, half meatball? I want half of the toppings that you would normally give me, but cross it over and spread it across.
I haven't tried that yet, Matt. So, like, do half of it cheese and then get two toppings on the other side?
They'll charge you for a two-topping pizza then.
Oh. But, I mean, it's still the same amount of topping.
Listen, there's
never
been a moment.
And then I don't have to eat that other bullshit cheese side.
There's never been a moment in anybody's life where they've been craving pizza where they're like, oh shit, I'm not going to get pizza cuz I don't want a whole one.
Right. And if you're like that, just go to fucking Pizza Hut and get a calzone.
Oh, yeah, I don't know what you guys have for like single slice pizza places, but go to one of them.
Oh yeah, there's plenty of those around.
No. No. See, I like my idea.
Not for me.
Matt, what's going to happen is
either that or you go to like Mod or Blaze and get yourself an actual nice pizza.
All of you
and those
people,
are definitely like a personal pizza.
All of you people are against this. But once this goes out into the world, people are going to be on my side.
I'll tell you, you got to put this out in the world real fast because you need to stop talking about this terrible idea.
Travis, people are going to be on my side, Travis. People are going to say, man, you know what? A half a pizza would be really nice. And like, you know, I would share the burden of the price with a stranger.
Maybe I'd make a new friend. Let me just go to this app, and then instead of driving to Papa John's, I'll drive to the Industrial Parkway over here and find some fucking
we can
schlub.
Briefly keep a chat window up where we talk about whether the pizza was good or not.
Let's meet under that dark underpass, and we'll split up the money.
What we can do, Travis, is we can make pizza fun. We can make it a social
pizza's
activity.
Already fun. What are you talking about?
Pizza's like the most fun.
It's only fun. There's right. nothing unfun about pizza. I am not sitting here going, God, how can I make pizza more fun because it's so fucking boring? I actually can't wait until Friday when we order pizza because that's how fun pizza is.
Yeah,
it's like,
Matt,
oh, great, the weekend's here. Pizza time.
Or yeah, that's Matt, how they reward like children is with pizza parties.
You're bringing pizza home to your family and having like a whole thing. Like, what if I just I just want to have a fun little pizza party by myself, Matt.
Then you go to Pizza Hut and get one of those book it pizzas. The personal deep dish.
And motherfuck, Mike, if you're at work, just ask one of your stupid coworkers and be like, hey, you want half a meatball pizza?
I'm and half a
meatball and half a pepperoni. You want a couple slices of each?
Oh, yeah. By the way, I'm going to need $9 for that. Thanks.
You guys talk shit.
The more you talk about this, the angrier I get.
Yeah. Like, all these pizza places are offering like $5 fucking medium pizzas, and you're like thinking, God, we really got to divvy up that $5.
It's not about the price, Travis. Pizza. The problem is I get that whole pizza and I got to eat it. I got to eat it because it's in front of me.
Or you
live by St. Louis. Give it to a homeless man.
Put it in the refrigerator, and then you got lunch for tomorrow, too. Half a pizza today, half a pizza tomorrow.
That is literally all you have to do.
Put it under Debbie's keyboard. So
you know how many times I've ordered a pizza at work and had two lunches out of it? Plenty.
Lunch, dinner, midnight snack, breakfast the next day, it's pizza.
Feed it to your fucking dog, for Christ's sake.
Well, I guess you guys just aren't my target demo.
And then you get like an order of some boneless wings or something.
My pizza split app.
I'll give your pizza split app 0 stars. This is pointless.
Pizza split is going to get a 1 star for me. Actually, I won't even get any stars because I'm not going to do it. Dude, I'm telling you, fucking MoviePass has a better business plan than what
your stock. Once you go public with your stock, you're going to have to pay everybody else to get your stock. This is awful.
Going to be a lot of splitting going on.
I'm going to ask Connor Ratliff about the pizza.
Did you ask Laura about this? What did she say?
No, I share my best stuff for you guys.
Of course, Laura would be like, why aren't you bringing me home your leftover fucking pizza? She doesn't know this fucking slob ate an entire medium pizza.
A medium's not even that big. She would sit there and go, you know what? That big.
It's wait, more pizza
who
than
did I
need,
married.
Bro.
I married a guy who took half a pepperoni and half a meatball, this fucking sociopath. That's who I married?
So because I want thing. Two different tastes for lunch, that makes me a sociopath, man.
Dude, I'm telling you, she would pack her bags. Like, you would come home from work tomorrow, and the dog would be
because
gone.
Because I ordered a half and half the pizza? Dog, I'm out. That's the final straw, Matt?
No, I'm not on his side on that one. I've done what you've done before.
I mean, homie wants two different flavors of pizza. That's really the straw that broke the camel's back. I'm mad now, Matt.
You ate 8 pieces of pizza for lunch.
It's too much pizza, Travis. I need somebody to help.
Throw it away. Save it.
That's a waste of pizza.
Save it.
I don't think pizza 8 pieces reheats of pizza is great. Too much for lunch.
It's made to reheat.
I had leftover deep dish Little Caesars today for lunch. You know how many
I
had?
You don't even have to reheat it. You can eat it cold.
I had 2 pieces
Travis,
of pizza.
Well, that's deep dish. That's different.
Travis, we have to get off
Drunk, don't you even. Don't you even. Travis, that's deep dish. That's
8 fucking pieces of pizza.
Well, no, 8 pieces of pizza is fine. But
if you're eating it like a Jack's frozen pizza.
I am not disputing the fact that you ate 8 pieces. I could eat 8 pieces of pizza. I have eaten 8 pieces of pizza.
I can, but and I not, do, Matt, you? But I shouldn't.
But you're not eating 8 pieces of deep dish. That's what I'm getting at, Matt.
It's Tuesday for lunch.
I could eat 8 pieces of deep dish.
That's a little doughy for me.
Let's Tuesday, do it. Come on. I'm drunk. You and I go toe-to-toe. I will eat fucking tons of anything you put in front of me. I'm a fat
well
fuck.
That you got to save that for
stuff. Well, I was about you like run and burn off calories and whatnot, though, so you eating a whole deep dish pizza is nothing for you. So
listen, I'm telling you right now, man, I sociopath fucking
both of us sociopath. Now we're both sociopaths.
Everybody
you have
you.
A very loose
fuck
definition. Travis, we have to get off this. We gotta
take a break, Mike.
Travis, listen to me.
I think we could talk about this for the whole hour if we're being honest.
You are the king of pranks, Travis.
You know it.
And a couple of weeks ago, we talked about the Clown Motel.
Oh, correct.
And so we thought, well, this Clown Motel.
I can't do this right now. I just tweeted at Papa John's.
It's a real place.
If we could get one or two, they're right. They're agreeing with you, Mike.
Yeah, exactly, Matt. Exactly. I'm lining up the break. Shut up. God damn it.
Fucking Papa John's just tweeted me back.
What did they say?
He said it should be considered one topping.
Yeah, it's one topping, Matt. One topping on each half of the pizza.
I think I've been charged.
So Travis made an attempt to call the Clown Motel, and it did not go according to plan, guys.
It really backfired on us, didn't it?
And so I thought that the people need to hear this, Travis. I know it's embarrassing, but you got to hear when Travis called the Clown Motel. Guys, we're going to go to break.
King of pranks.
When we come back, we're talking to Connor Ratliff about Dead Eyes. Pretty excited about it.
Hello.
Hi there. Who am I calling here?
You called me, so you should know that who you're calling.
Oh, I just want to make sure I have the right number. How you doing tonight?
Doing good.
Good, good. You guys got vacancies?
Yes, I do. So you know that where you called.
yeah, I wasn't sure. I just
that be the place is motel, yes.
It's motel, yeah, motel, yeah. You got vacancies for the next couple days?
I do.
All right, great. That's great. Thanks a lot. That's all I needed. You have yourself a good 4th of July, okay?
Okay, you too. Okay, thank you.
Okay, bye bye.
Okay, bye.
As a business, you're supposed to say what your business is.
He just said hello.
Right. And then when I say, yeah, who am I calling,
yeah,
he says, you should know who you're calling. You called me. It's like, yeah, I want to make sure I got the right place, you dipshit.
Yeah, because you answered the phone, hello.
Right. Am I calling a resident?
You're listening to StrangeLabel.com. Viva La Label.
It's Christmas. No one wants me today, no way. Every other day of the year I'm feeling great, 'cause everyone wants me, but I'm a pizza, I'm a pizza. And there's one thing you can say, no one wants a pizza on Christmas Day. No, 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 no. No one wants a pizza on Christmas Day.
WFOD!
Beer's drunk with a look at the weather.
Our obesity epidemic can be best described as a boiling pot of rice. It keeps getting hotter, and we keep getting softer and fatter. Destined to a life of struggle and no polar bears. Now back to the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks internet radio program.
Starlight, I'll kiss you.
Guys, welcome back. Our guest tonight is an actor, comedian, and podcast host. His latest, Dead Eyes, can be heard on the Earwolf Presents feed. Connor Ratliff is on the program. Hi, Connor.
Hello. Can you hear me?
Connor! Hey!
Hi.
Welcome to the show.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Connor, I have an idea. I've been talking to the fellas about this, and they all hate it. But I think that you're going to be my guy. You're going to be on my side here.
Okay. I'm eager to find out what this is.
An application on your telephone. That
sound like an old man calling it an application.
Yeah, it's like a dating app, but it's just for splitting pizzas.
You sign up using your electronic mail account.
So, like, I order a medium pizza. I can eat a medium pizza, but I shouldn't eat a medium pizza. I would be fine with half a medium pizza, but if I have the whole medium pizza, I'm going to eat the whole pizza. So if I could just find somebody in a similar situation who wants half a pizza.
Oh, it's like a ride share.
Yeah, yeah. It's like the Uber share. But
share,
for pizza.
Slice share. It's a slice share.
Connor's on my side, guys. I can tell.
I can't.
He didn't say he was on your side. He just was explaining
what it was.
He
understands
the idea.
Connor, do you want to meet a strange man in a Papa John's parking lot for your half of a pepperoni meatball pizza?
No, I don't want that. I mean, when you phrase it that way, like, yeah,
they phrase it bad.
I don't want that.
Listen to the way I said it. It sounded good, right?
Well, yeah. I mean, that's the wrong pitch. Like, Uber wouldn't work if it was pitched by that way. You want to get in a car with a stranger?
A stranger will come meet you in a dark alley and take you anywhere you want to go for money.
I do understand that it's eating discipline is hard, and we sometimes need to come up with ways that we
don't
kind of
fucking spin this into eating discipline.
Well, that's what they said. It's like Fitbit is a way of like making you pay attention in a different way. Now,
and
it doesn't
work. Everybody that fucking has a Fitbit is 450 pounds.
Well, I don't think that's true, but I don't. It didn't work for me. Like, someone gave me a Fitbit, and I didn't like that it. You're supposed to wear it when you sleep, and then it tells you what you did while you slept. I didn't like that.
To tell you when to stand.
Well, it just too much. It just knew too much about me, and I got rid of it.
And they said, "Oh, well,
the same thing with my ex-wife.
Just throw the other half of the pizza away. Who's going to do that? Nobody's going to do that.
Eat it on a second meal. That's what pizza's
nobody
made
said.
For.
Throw the other half of pizza away. Everybody said save it for the next day. Whatever the
midnight
case may be.
Snack,
that's
whatever.
Easier said than done. It does. I do find that like." Here's the thing psychologically that I understand where this is coming from. I'm not willing to say this is a good idea for an app yet, but I was at an improv festival recently and there was free pizza in the green room. And I was talking to some people and I went while I was talking to them and I ate a slice of the pizza and they weren't eating the pizza. And then at a certain point I decided I would get a second slice of the pizza.
Connor, can I ask you what type of pizza it was?
It was pepperoni pizza. It was in Baltimore. It was fine.
Okay. Was the other half meatball?
No, it was just a regular pepperoni pizza. All right. Not too thin, not too thick. It was just an average kind of pizza.
Is there a Baltimore-style pizza?
I don't know that that's what this was. If there is one, I feel like you can get this kind of pizza in most places. There was nothing I detected about it that was special, but it was fine. And I wanted a third piece, but I felt self-conscious about the fact that I'd eaten two slices and no one else had eaten any, and so I didn't eat the third slice.
Well, so you just what we really need is we just need to shame ourselves into eating that.
I think maybe you sign up for a thing and it's like a slice shamer, and instead of having this person take your pizza, they just make you feel self-conscious about it. They just you sign up for someone to come tell you like take that home, don't eat it now.
So it's like a Fitbit, but it counts how many slices
of
pizza.
See, now this I can get behind. It's like those people are alerted every time you have a slice, and they're like, do you really need that fifth slice of pizza that you order? You can do something. I like this
idea. It's like a pizza sponsor?
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah, it's like that, because there are people who just want to help, and they just want to tell people what to do. There are people who would like this. I don't think any money needs to change hands. I think you just alert, and if you're like, some people would sign up and they'd be like, do you want to tell people that they don't need to eat the pizza yet? I think there'd be people who do that. Some people, it might have accidental, you know, you might form friendships this way or relationships this way, or, you know.
Yeah, this I don't like anything about this.
I would love to like write a romantic comedy where two people sign up for this app and like the dude is trying not to eat so much pizza and he falls in love with the gal who's telling him, man, you don't need that third or fourth piece of pizza. And then they like get together and it's like just a magical love story.
How about this for an app? Okay. It's an app that you record yourself saying, I'd like to order a medium pepperoni pizza, please. And then it translates it into, I'd like to order a small. and you just play that recording for the person in the pizza place.
It's like a social media lock. It just, right. you can't have a medium pizza.
You did like a podcast pilot. Is that what you call that?
Yes. Yes.
On Earwolf. It's on the Earwolf Presents feed. It's called Dead Eyes, and the premise of the show, when I saw somebody tweeted it, and I saw it, and I checked it out, and I've actually like turned like five people on to listening to it because I enjoyed it so much. So
I was intrigued by the whole thing.
Thank you.
Yeah. So I guess give us the pitch for this
All right.
show.
The podcast is called Dead Eyes, and it's a true investigation of a very, very minor show business mystery / adventure experience that I had once. And basically, it boils down to this. About two decades ago, I was cast in a very small speaking role in the HBO miniseries Band of Brothers. And it was a
great show. Great series. By the way.
It was a great show. Emmy winning show. Major television event.
Huge.
Sure. Rub it in, Matt.
No, I'm just saying I love it. I watch it maybe every couple of years. I watch it from beginning to end. It's amazing.
Well, I was supposed to show up in episode 5 when the character played by Damian Lewis, he gets promoted to a higher rank and he's no longer with his men, you know, and now he's in sort of more comfortable like officer's quarters. And he has a private who is assigned to him named Private Zelensky. And this character basically just asks him if he wants tea or coffee. If he needs anything, and that's all the character does.
Mm-hmm.
And the day before I was supposed to film my episode, I got a phone call. I went to drama school in England, and I was living in England and working as an actor when I could. And I was in Liverpool getting ready to go down to London to film. And I get a phone call from my agent at the time, and they said, you have to come down to London immediately. And I said, well, I'm getting ready to. I'll be catching a train in a few hours. They said, no, you have to go now. Tom Hanks, who was directing episode 5, Tom Hanks has seen your audition tape and he's having second thoughts. He thinks you have dead eyes. And so I had to go immediately down to London and then up from London to Hatfield Airfield or whatever, aerodrome. And I had to re-audition personally for Tom Hanks for this part that... you know, if you've watched Band of Brothers, you might even be wondering, wait, which part is this? Because I ended up getting fired. And if you've seen the show, I don't know that the character says more than one line in the actual show. Like all the dialogue ended up getting cut anyway. It was not a major character.
Was there any way that you could have put sunglasses on? Would it have made sense? Would it have been?
I think, yes, there was definitely a way. I don't think it would have helped.
Oh.
But it was, I tell this story in some detail in the pilot episode of the podcast and the show, the series, when it continues, is going to continue investigating, various aspects of, there's actually more to the story than you hear in the pilot episode.
Yeah. As soon as the episode was over, I immediately wanted to turn to the next episode and it wasn't there.
To be fired by America's sweetheart, Travis.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, Tom Hanks, for Christ's sake.
You know, Connor, it's funny. Like somebody reached out to me and said, hey man, you know, for the next month I have IMDb Pro. If there's any emails you want me to get, you know, get people on the show. And so jokingly I said, Tom Hanks.
Yeah.
And they gave me Tom Hanks's PR person. And I mean, like, Tom Hanks's PR person does not need to reply to me.
Right.
It's stupid. Like, come on.
You emailed them anyway, right?
Of course. I mean, like, you know, I jokingly told him Tom Hanks, and I emailed Tom Hanks. Got a reply from Tom Hanks. It was so nice. They're like, I'm sorry, Tom Hanks is busy. He can't make it. But I mean, like, to even reply, he's so nice, Travis. Tom Hanks.
And you know, I want to be clear because there would have been a time where if podcasts had existed 20 years ago, I guess they would, if I had had a radio program 20 years ago, there were probably a few years. I went through a rough couple of years where I sort of quit show business and I was sort of lost for a little while.
Yeah.
And not just because of this experience, but because when this happened to me, I was already in kind of a bad place in terms of I didn't like being an actor. I didn't like, it's a bad life. And I have fallen back into it again now, but I wasn't seeking it. Like now I'm an actor. You can find me in various little TV shows and movies now and then, you know, but I sort of fell back into show business by accident. And part of the podcast is about the way that this experience sort of it sort of toughened me up in some ways. If I had done this 2 decades ago, I think it would have been a very bitter and unlistenable podcast.
Would you have been, dare I say, motherfucking Tom Hanks?
I would have been very angry. I would have been very like, it would have been a sour thing. Whereas now, it's, anyone who listens to the first episode of the podcast, you'll get the picture right away that this is not a revenge podcast. It's not a vendetta. It's not me trying to settle scores. It actually, it doesn't even operate from the premise that anyone made any kind of mistake in judgment. Like one of the maybe, perhaps unattainable goals of the podcast is I would like to try to see if my original audition tape exists somewhere in a vault, in a closet, in a shoebox.
And it has to. Like everything is so archived.
Maybe, maybe not. You know, this would have been 2000 and it would have been shot on mini DV. I could easily imagine at some point in the past 2 decades, somebody saying to someone else, do we need this box full of Band of Brothers audition tapes? And someone else saying, 100% we do not.
Don't you think that they just have to keep that box in storage somewhere in case somebody in a small role like that?
Somebody's going to commission the Band of Brothers 20th anniversary Blu-ray box set that they're going to want all of the auditions for every role in that thing, and they're going to need to put those on those discs so they can sell it through.
That's what I think, Connor. I genuinely believe that's there's a fucking storage unit out there somewhere that they're still paying on. And it's got your whatever, you know.
I think we'll find out, too, because in the podcast, when you tell all of your listeners to tweet at Tom Hanks saying, find that Connor Ratliff Band of Brothers audition tape, that movement is going to start.
The hope is that we're recording a little bit for the second and third episode right now. At the moment, we're sort of figuring out a couple of practical logistical things in terms of where the podcast is going to continue, because I don't think it's going to continue on Earwolf, but it might. There are a number of sort of irons in the fire that we're trying to figure out. But as we are recording material for episode 2 and 3 and beyond, there have been some discoveries. I'm not going to spoil anything here, but already there have been some obstacles to the investigation that have popped up, some unexpected obstacles. And at least one new possible branch of communication has opened up. And my hope is that this will be like a snowball, that like as the investigation continues, that as people discover it and get sort of invested in it, that we're going to stumble across, somebody who knows somebody who knows somebody. You know what I mean?
Right.
And certainly, one of the aims is to try to eventually meet Tom Hanks and at bare minimum have some sort of communication with him one way or the other.
Wouldn't it be great if you were doing this entire investigation and then you guys actually find Richard Simmons?
I mean, who knows what could happen, you know? That would be an unexpected
He's at his house. Right. He's fine.
But I'll take it, you know?
What I was listening to the show, I was listening today and I was thinking, like, if this show continues, like, for an extended period of time, is this something that you're hoping to use as, like, a platform, too, to, like, have other people share their stories of, like, their one dejection that totally ruined them?
Yeah, I mean, in the first episode, I talked to Darcy Carden, who you might know from The Good Place or from the show Barry. And just in the course of our conversation, we're friends from back when she was at UCB New York at Upright Citizens Brigade. And she told me this story I'd never heard before about how she, when she was a kid, she was essentially fired from a children's theater group that she was a part of that was at the time the center of her life and her world. And I realized when we were talking, I was like, oh, everybody has something like this, you know, some sort of story. And I think that's going to be an interesting, we have a couple of crazy avenues that we know we're going to go down, but I know one thing that I could basically find an excuse to have any famous actor on this podcast to talk to me because there's not one famous actor who doesn't have an experience of, devastating or unusual rejection.
Tom Cruise. I don't think Tom Cruise has ever been rejected in his life.
He's been divorced multiple times, Matt.
I don't know. I don't think he has been. I think he's got that fucking Scientology on his side. It's working.
I don't know. I bet there might be an early Tom Cruise experience that was formative.
Oh, sure.
He's found all kinds of ways of adapting to, you know, like one of Tom Cruise's tricks that I think is kind of brilliant is that when he goes on a talk show, although he's been very funny in a number of movies, I think he figured out very quickly that as a talk show guest, he doesn't necessarily have funny stories, but he will instead laugh at the host
and make them feel like they're doing a really good job.
And I don't think it's insincere, but I do think it's like it's almost like the way an animal, we have these survival mechanism. So he's like a great guest as an audience for, you know, whatever. If he's on a talk show, he will make sure that he is like laughing at everything.
Yeah, and then what are they going to do? Grill him after he's been so nice to him?
So what you're saying is season two is going to be Tom Cruise.
I mean, it could be. I don't know who I'm going to get.
Don't commit to it, but we get what you're putting out there.
I don't have a Tom Cruise story, but I do have... There are a couple of fascinating show business side tangents that could either end up in a second season of this or as a cul-de-sac. If the investigation hits a dead end at any point or we're waiting for the next step, I have at least one additional sort of dead eyes mystery that I think I could solve in one episode that has to do with another movie that I wasn't hired for, but I came close to being hired for. Even just there's a story that this has already been told on an episode of the Chris Gethard show, but I was almost Colonel Sanders a couple of years ago.
Oh, nice.
And I came so close to being Colonel Sanders that I got to a phase that actors will recognize. There's a point where you're auditioning for a commercial, and then there's a point where you start getting phone calls from your agents saying, you're really available for this, right? They start like double checking and triple checking with you, and you realize, oh, I actually might book this.
Yeah.
And they start bringing you back for more and more auditions.
Was this like when they already started having...
No.
Oh, this was like you would have been Colonel Sanders. Sanders. Not like I'm going to be Colonel Sanders for a couple of weeks.
Yeah, not Rob Riggle fucking.
Yeah. This was actually, I actually think I got an inside view that very few people had of their process because I was in the room and they were having me like improvise more than I've ever improvised in any audition. They were having me make up little songs and all this stuff.
Like
and
chicken then, songs?
Yeah, little banjo songs. I don't play the banjo, but I would just like make up a little song that you could sing with a banjo. And I was leaving the room and there were, you know, like 10 people in the room at that point because all the different representatives were there. And as I was leaving the room, I heard someone casually ask someone else, "Hey, does anyone know Daryl Hammond's manager?" And the door's like closing as I hear this. And I was like, "Oh no, that's a good idea." But here's the thing, and I'm just assuming this, but I think I'm correct. I think they thought that Daryl Hammond was like a Will Ferrell or a Fred Armisen. I think they thought he was someone who was going to come in and generate a lot of material as an improviser. I think they just assumed that because they've seen him be hilarious on Saturday Night Live, and people assume that all people on Saturday Night Live have the same skill set. I saw those first commercials with Daryl Hammond as Colonel Sanders, and they were to the letter. They were the text of the scripts that I had auditioned with.
Those were your audition scripts.
They were the things I had auditioned with, and there was no improv at all in those Daryl Hammond commercials. And they had me do a lot of improv if all they wanted was for someone to come in and do the text that they'd written, just that copy. And so he had it for like 2 or 3 months, and then they announced that Norm MacDonald was going to be the next Colonel Sanders.
Connor, I'm done with Band of Brothers. Kentucky Fried Chicken, this is the story.
Well, no, because I've solved this mystery.
Oh, this one is solved. Mike.
There's nowhere to go with this because I know what happened, which is that they were like, oh, we could just keep getting a new Colonel Sanders every few months, and that is they just adapted to the fact that they had to make a change. Because then Norm MacDonald, I think, probably came in and riffed on stuff. And then they were like, oh, we can just change this whenever we want. Then the Gethard Show did a bit when it was on True TV where they had KFC wanted to do like branded content within one of the episodes. So they did a bit where it was me and they told mostly the story of how I was almost Colonel Sanders. And they had me like do the character on the show as like a bit of branded content. But that was an example of like it was a mystery and I solved it, which was that they wanted an improviser. Then they thought, oh, no, let's get a famous SNL improviser. Then they realized that what he was a stand-up comedian and sketch actor, which is different, I assume, because I didn't see a single commercial that had anything that was unfamiliar to me as someone who had read all their ad copy. And then all of a sudden our new bit is that We go through Colonel Sanders every few months and we get a Reba and we get Jim Gaffigan, and it's
it's a fun bit.
Yeah.
It's a fun bit.
Until we run out of Colonel Sanders and then we'll call somebody to stick around with us for a while.
Now, is it as fun as it would have been if they had let me go crazy as Colonel Sanders improvising to begin with? Maybe it's more fun. I don't know. But I know that they were definitely looking for someone to be Colonel Sanders for what seemed like a long haul engagement. To discover an improviser. And then they were like, oh, or we could get a celebrity who improvises. Then they were like, oh, this guy's just doing the script. And then they're like, let's just get a new person every few months. And it's like, well, now, we can get Reba McEntire because we don't have to ask Reba to be Colonel Sanders for 5 years.
Yeah, she knows what the deal is now.
Yeah, she can come in. It's a quick, easy gig. It's fun. It's funny. No one associates you permanently as Colonel Sanders, right. I've already unpacked that to the point where I don't think it would be an episode of Dead Eyes because I know the answer to it. Whereas a big part of what is exciting about this podcast is I genuinely don't know where it's going. I have a number of contingency plans, including, one piece of early feedback we got from someone was saying like, well, we don't think we're going to get Tom Hanks for this. And I thought, well, that's fine. This doesn't necessarily have to end with, it doesn't have to end for one thing. I could imagine a version of this podcast where it went for years and we ended up discovering different pathways and different stories and other mysteries. Originally the show Twin Peaks, their idea was that they would never solve the mystery of who killed Laura Palmer. And then when they did, they actually found it sort of like was a problem for the show. And then when they returned, they sort of realized like, oh, the questions are more interesting than the answers anyway. Now, having said that, I would like to solve this mystery, and I'm going to try very hard to get not an answer necessarily, but any contact at all, I think counts as a win. I think even if the answer is I don't want to have anything to do with your podcast, this
well,
is an old
question. Well, I mean,
Connor,
if I can get a reply, you can get a reply.
So I was going to say, like, Mike.
I'll share the PR contact with you. I'll email it to you.
Mike suggested listening to the show, and you know, you've got a ton of people all the time saying, "Hey, check this show out! Check this show out!"
Yeah,
it almost seems overwhelming. And I was like, all right, I'll check it out. It's a 30-minute pilot episode. And I'm going to say, like, it kind of captures you right away. It's funny. It's entertaining. It's charming.
Thank you.
You know, like, it's lighthearted. It's something that you're not going to have to take too seriously, like so much of the stuff that's out there right now where you have to really, like,
yeah,
you know, get so wrapped up in or so invested in. And this is like, oh, man, this is really just lighthearted, good fun.
Yeah.
You know, talking to these other actors.
And there's a
silly investigation. And I don't mean to say silly, like demeaning. It's just like, I'm going to have a good time with this.
Yeah.
It's going to be pure fun.
Now, Connor, how can the people help? How can we make a Dead Eyes all it can be? Do we bother Earwolf? Who do we bother?
You don't need to bother anybody.
Do I got to tweet at Scott Aukerman?
Yeah, you tweet at Scott Aukerman. You tell, hey, we want more of this Dead Eyes. We want to know how it ends.
Let's start sending pizzas to Tom Hanks' house. That's
there
what I'm going to do.
Yeah,
well the thing, definitely don't tweet at Tom Hanks, because I feel like we have not made the attempt yet to make contact with Tom Hanks.
Right.
Because, in part, because there's a little bit of investigation I would like to do before we get to that point. That's sort of like in any mystery, you kind of don't necessarily want to like start interrogating suspects first. You know, you want to build your case. And so I want to get a fuller sense of what I don't know before I take this to that point. You know, you can follow at Connor Ratliff on Twitter. You can follow at Dead Eyes Podcast on Twitter. And the most important thing you could do, honestly, is tell people that you think would like the podcast to listen to it and to talk about it on social media, just to like say you like it. And, you know, like that helps if, you know, and you can tag Earwolf if you want, but like, we basically just want to, I think the more people hear it, the more people like it, because we've had a pretty good experience with, even in this, it's a very saturated marketplace now. This podcast is arriving at the moment when people are exhausted by they're spoiled for choice with podcasts. And the one thing that's been most heartening is that even people that I've said to people, hey, listen to my podcast, and they've been reluctant, have like come back to me and been like, I was reluctant and now I want to hear more. Like
I can't wait for more content from it, Connor. I really can't.
We can expect like the same format as the pilot episode when you when you continue with, you said you're recording some of episode 2 and 3. Do you have an idea of when we might hear more or what you plan on doing?
Hopefully soon. I don't have an answer yet, because a lot of that depends on where it lands for the full like season. I wanted to get the pilot out there just because we had it done, and I thought I don't want to wait. I'd rather get it out there in the world to just even gauge, is it worth continuing with this? And it will be, I think, roughly the same format, but with the leaving open the possibility that surprising things will happen along the way. Near the end of the first episode, there's a reveal that I think is unexpected. In terms of where we sort of, once I tell the story of the Tom Hanks incident back in 2000, I then sort of divert the investigation. I sort of flash back to when I was in high school, and there's a like a surprise appearance by a very famous actor.
That was a surprise. It was very enjoyable.
Oh, St. Louis's favorite son.
I did not see that coming, and that surprise is so great.
That we've already got recorded for the second episode, that conversation with that actor. And right. I think for people, I think that will give you an idea of how we want to approach the episode, that even if it takes us a long time to get to Tom Hanks, I mean, maybe it won't. Maybe we'll get to Tom Hanks in episode 4 and then we'll figure out where it goes from there. But even if it takes a long time to get to Tom Hanks, I think there are other opportunities for sort of delightful surprises along the way.
Yeah,
And I think that's the way I want to approach it, is that like there are people that I want to talk to for this that I think listeners will be like, oh, I never expected this person would in it be in any way tied to this mystery. Mm-hmm. And some of them will be very tangential, but I think it'll be a fun journey to the point where even if people start and the idea originally is like, oh, I hope he gets to meet Tom Hanks or I hope he gets to hear from Tom Hanks. My goal is to get it to a point where people are like, almost don't want the journey to end, you know, yeah. That's sort of my goal for it is that I want the episodes to be, in addition to a mystery, also kind of a fun hang, if that makes sense.
Right. Absolutely. Yeah. Well, I'm looking forward to further episodes. Some people can, if they want to stay updated, they follow you at Connor Ratliff and at Dead Eyes Podcast.
Yeah. And the more you can spread the word, if you like it and you think you know somebody else who might like it, and the more people just talk about it, whether it's on, you know, Reddit or Twitter or wherever you go online to talk about things, every little bit helps, you know,
and guys, we'll post links to all of it on our social media so that you can check it out if you're listening to this. So, Connor, it was cool talking to you. We should do it again sometime.
Thanks, Connor.
Thank you so much. And best of luck with that pizza app.
Thanks, Connor.
Guys, we're going to go to break. We'll be back in just a minute.
Dubfod goes hard.
Hey, ain't you kind of far from home? What are you doing here?
We're just looking for somebody.
Yeah, who's that?
Just a guy.
Here is Mike with a quick update on the WFOD Hollywood Fantasy League.
With its 63% Metacritic, Not Safe for Water Coolers needs $60 million from Dora the Explorer to overtake the Po' Boys. It made 17 this weekend. To Quell Hopes, the Beatles Never Existed movie made 17 its opening weekend and got up to 36 after week two. So finding that 60 doesn't look great. We're not looking all that good either. Scary Stories made 21 this weekend with a 65% Metacritic. So we're now depending on Angry Birds, which is not where one wants to be in this biz. We'll have a pretty good idea where everyone's going to shake out next week.
You loved it when they made bigger dinosaurs in Jurassic World.
You just went and made a new dinosaur?
Probably not a good idea.
You loved it when they made Predator into a giant predator that eats predators.
What's the big one, Doc? Is that like the male?
No. In 2019, Larry and Richard have an even bigger problem.
Richard? I think Bernie is dead. And he's also severely obese.
20th Century Fox brings you back to something you love. But can't leave it at that.
We can't pull this off. He is too big.
I have an idea. The stakes are raised, Richard.
But that's not all.
Hello, I'm Gwen.
What?
That's right. She's very beautiful, but also...
I'm a lawyer.
A lawyer? Do not fall in love with her, Richard. She will certainly know we are doing an illegal thing because she is smart. The stakes are raised, Richard.
I won't.
He does. Weekend at Bernie's. Coming soon to a theater near you.
If you have a knife, you can join me. If you don't have a knife, you can use mine.
Once again, WFOD. Wheelbarrow full of dicks.
Like that student in the principal office, for rappers and coffins, they dive like dolphins. I'm the dad of the lyrical marvel, you don't come drunk off. So
Guys, welcome back. Our guest tonight is an actor, author, director, and stuntman. The documentary based on his life, Danger God, is available now on video on demand and DVD on September 17th. Gary Kent is on the program. Gary, are you there?
I am here. Hello. 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 Hello.
Gary, sorry that we're late. I appreciate
no problem.
I watched your movie based on your life today. It's a hell of a watch, man.
Thank you. Yeah. I've lived it. Whatever.
You've lived it. Whatever, huh? So you're
right.
You wanted to get into movies, and being a stuntman was your way in, or did you have like a? Is that what you wanted to do, or is that just what you saw as the way in?
You know, I sort of fell into it, pun intended. I had intentions of being an actor, and I was acting in legitimate theater in Houston, Texas. And I was like 21 years old. The theater broke up, and everybody went to New York, except I had just seen Brando and On the Waterfront. And I thought, no, I'm not going. I'm going to Hollywood. I want to do what he's doing. So I took a Greyhound to Hollywood. Long story short, most of the actors were out of work. And I thought, well, I don't want that. So I noticed I was watching a Frank Sinatra movie shoot on Gower Street. And they said, okay, stuntman, stand by your cars. I had no idea what a stuntman was. All of a sudden, these guys looked like gladiators got standing next to these automobiles. Okay, start your engines, action. Cars started banging each other. Guys got out, got in fist fights, whatever. And I thought, that's what I want to do. So I sort of made up my mind to make doing stunts a priority. Although I knew nothing about it or how to get started or what to do, I sort of put that on the top instead of acting.
And you said early in the film that you didn't know you were supposed to wear pads. So you're just kind of out there taking bumps and... And probably
didn't have a clue. Didn't have a clue.
And people back then probably just said, wow, this guy's macho. This guy is hardcore.
Right. And Jack thought I was doubling Jack Nicholson. And Jack thought I was just the greatest because I wasn't using pads. I didn't know you're supposed to use them.
So he appreciated
I didn't use a rubber gun. I had a real gun on my hip.
So Jack Nicholson, he used to make he did a lot of cowboy movies and stuff, right?
Right. I was raised on a ranch, so I knew a lot about horses.
And I guess that gives you a leg up that you know how to ride a horse. I imagine a lot of people probably
do. I can stick on one, yeah.
Yeah.
If you tie me on.
You were part of the inspiration for the new Quentin Tarantino movie that came out. You're sort of what Brad Pitt's character is based off. And I guess a big part of it because you have like a Charles Manson story. And I mean, that's kind of the whole rub of that movie is a stuntman and Charles Manson.
Yeah. I have not seen the movie.
Oh,
yet.
You haven't seen it yet?
No, I'd love to see it. What did you think? Did you see it?
I did. Yeah, it was really long, Gary. I felt like they probably could have cut about 40 minutes out of it, and it would have been. I mean, it was good. Sure. I mean, Quentin doesn't make like bad movies. But,
right.
But yeah, I mean, there's a whole lot of guys driving around changing radio stations. But so you met Charles Manson. I guess you filmed a lot on that. Ranch, the ranch depicted in the movie.
Yeah, there were a lot of independent films shot there because you could shoot. There were no telephone poles and no TV antennas, so you could shoot Westerns there. You could shoot films from the 20s or the 30s there and not worry about background. So you could also rent horses there. Old Man Spahn, the fellow that owned the ranch, lovely old man. He was blind, but a nice guy. I remember, don't get me started, I'd walk in to see Old Man Spahn. We were going to shoot a film there. So I would go to talk to Old Man Spahn, who would always be in his ranch house. You'd open the door and go in. And the minute you went in, you were overwhelmed with the worst odor you ever smelled in your life. and he would be sitting at a table having coffee and smoking cigars, and there would be dogs and cats everywhere, and every one of them would be pooping on the floor.
Oh, Jesus.
Pooping in the, on the upholstery and everything. It was just never cleaned. And you'd go, oh, my God. But it didn't seem to bother him. He seemed to be right at home with it.
So you just went into the house and there was just, it was just, everything was covered in feces. That's insanity.
Yeah, that was George's inside of his house. Yeah. Then he had a Western street with wooden sidewalks, which was, you know, you could rent that street and be back in the old West. And he had livery stables and barns and old outbuildings and shacks. And in those shacks and in George Bond's ranch house lived Charlie Manson, this little guy, and his girls. They had wheedled their way into letting them stay on the ranch. One of them, supposedly Squeaky Frome, was servicing old man Spawn in a variety of ways, which wouldn't surprise me. He was a horny old duffer, but and it kept him very happy. Yeah.
So there's just one of them that was happy. Taking one for the team, I guess.
Yeah, yeah.
So the whole gang.
So, the whole gang. So Charlie kind of took over and was, we didn't know that. All we knew is they were a bunch of hippies. Yeah. They had already, by the time we did one movie, they had already done the murders. But yeah, we didn't know that. We just saw it around there.
You know, everybody
need a bath.
Kind of romanticized the entire Charlie Manson thing and Charles Manson. And its whole thing is everybody's so obsessed with it and they want to see movies and documentaries and all that. But it's so funny at the time. It's just a bunch of fucking stinky hippies that are living in this little ranch.
Absolutely.
So they didn't
absolutely.
They didn't get caught right away? They got away with it?
Not right away, no.
Oh,
no, not right away. They didn't. They went from there to the there were several. You know, I just finished a great book on Shorty Shea. I don't know if that name means anything to you, but he was a stuntman sort of kind of on the Spawn Ranch that was killed by Charlie before the other murders.
Jesus.
And everybody thinks of Sharon Tate and the LaBiancas, but here was this wonderful, colorful, humane stunt guy that lived there that wanted desperately to be a stuntman, but he never really made it.
I didn't
so
know
were you, the, were you Charles guys Manson just dodging,
actually killed anybody. I thought he just sent people to do it for him. Did he actually kill this guy?
Yes, he and three of his buddies, they didn't like Shorty Shea at all, because Shorty, first of all, wouldn't join the... They were always trying to recruit people for Charlie, especially men, because he needed men. He had all those girls. Yeah. But Shorty Shea would have nothing to do with him. And Shorty's hung around and sort of wrangled horses. And old man Spawn gave him a place to stay. And he was just always up against it monetarily. He was one of them, but just a really wonderful guy. And he disliked Charlie a lot. And Charlie decided, and Shorty Shea dated a beautiful black woman and married her. And Charlie was very, very anti-black.
Yeah.
And he couldn't stand Shorty for doing that. And so Shorty had to go. And long story short, Charlie and three of his buddies picked up Shorty in a car. And I won't go on and on, but old man Spawn had a woman named Ruby who worked for him and did the bookkeeping and stuff. And she said she saw Shorty being hustled into a car by those four guys. And she thought, that's no good. He doesn't like them. They don't like what is Shorty doing? But she decided Shorty, being in her mind a stuntman, she thought he can take care of himself.
Oh, wow.
What they did is they took him over the ridge and stabbed him to death and cut his throat.
Jeez.
Yeah.
So you were aware that these people, it wasn't that they were just these dirty hippies that you had to dodge every day. It was that you were aware that they were unsavory characters, right? That there was something nefarious up
absolutely.
With these people?
Absolutely. Absolutely. They put off a vibe, you know, all of them, even the girls, that was very weird. That just, yeah. You know, they're not only hippies, but they're weird people.
They were ne'er-do-wells.
Yeah.
So
ne'er-do-well and lived in an alternative reality like Tech Watson.
Were they doing anything else for old man Spawn besides pleasuring these girls with pleasure? And that's the only reason they got to stay on the ranch, was that he was being serviced by Charlie's gals?
They would do some of the wrangling.
Okay.
And cleaning his house, which they never really did.
Yeah.
But after a while, they would shop for him at the grocery.
It sounds like a pretty steal sweet his money. Gig. It sounds great, like to have all this free space, and all you got to do is get one of your friends to hook up with a old blind guy once a week,
yeah,
or something. I mean, that's a good living,
exactly,
if you can get it, Gary.
Exactly.
So
that was it.
After you were a stuntman for a while, you moved into like a more acting roles, and then you started directing and just kind of got into the whole movie thing. And you're still acting, aren't you? Are you still?
Absolutely. I really am a fan of motion pictures. I love working them. I love the smell of the set, the lights cooking, the grease paint. I love the whole oeuvre of making a film. It's just so interesting to me, from the camera to the lighting to craft service. It's just all great.
Is it something about maybe like it living on past you? Is that part of the allure of it, to know that you're leaving art in the world? Does that make sense?
You know, that makes sense, but that's not it,
no,
really.
You just like
it
doing
it. It is in the actual physical act of being on a set, and I'm sure you have been. They say, Quentin frequently said, if you want to be in film, don't go to film school. Get on a film. Work a film.
Just show
because
up.
Because there's just, yeah, just show up and start doing something, and pretty soon the beast starts taking over. And the beast being the movie, and you realize what a bloody interesting thing this is. I forget who Owen Wilson once said that every time you work a film, no matter how bad, there comes a time when you all think, hey, this may really be something. We got something great going here.
It's not even so much the finished product. It's the work.
It's doing it. Exactly. Exactly right. Whether you're a grip and doing that, or doing the lighting, being a gaffer, or whether you're on camera, or whether you're an actor, and the actors really get it. Everybody puts them down, but the actors are the last person in front of the camera. And if they're awful, the whole thing doesn't work. You kind of have to put up with them because they're doing a really, really difficult thing, which is being someone else in front of the camera. The acting is different than being a movie star. They're two different things. I'm sure you're aware of that. Being a movie star is a whole other trip, but being an actor is inhabiting the essence of another person, another character, something someone has written and a director is directing, and you have to get out of your skin and get into that other personage. And it's a delicate art. It's a slippery, slippery thing, but it's beautifully done by many actors.
Matt, you acted, right? What was your character's name in that movie? Didn't you have like a character that with a cool name that you had?
You know, I just insisted that anytime I acted and portrayed anybody on the screen, it would be Juke.
Juke? Your character's name is Juke.
Oh, yeah.
J-U-K-E?
There it is. Juke, yeah.
Juke. Hey, Juker, babe. How you doing?
Gary, well, if you could pick one movie that people should check out, I mean, other than the documentary, of course, the documentary about your life, Danger God, available now on video on demand. It'll be on DVD September 17th. Like, what's the one that people should go check out?
You know, I have three, but I'll give you one.
Let's hear all three.
I want to hear all three.
Give us all three.
We're going to do a Gary Film Fest, Travis. We're going to...
Yep.
Okay, I did a film called Psych Out for Richard Rush, and it stars Jack Nicholson and Adam Rourke and Susan Strasberg, Bruce Dern. But I got to do all kinds of stuff on that movie, And it's about the hippies also, about the counterculture in San Francisco.
Damn hippies.
But I got to do all the effects and fire effects and freeway effects and without CGI and just do it for real. So artistically, creatively, I had to really get my shit together, if you'll excuse me. Then I directed all the stunts.
So you were behind the camera on that one?
Right. I did effects that for things that were in front of the camera. Like Susan, what am I talking about? Susan Strasberg takes, her character takes acid by mistake. And she's never done it. She doesn't know what it is. And she runs out into the San Francisco night with acid coming on. And she goes on a trip. And it's a negative one. So the director told me, I want to see a frightening trip. Can we have a fire? Can she go into the fire? Because her brother had left her a note saying, you'll find me in the fire. So she's, that triggers her. So all he said is, let's have a fire trip. I got to experiment with so much fire to do that film. And it came off beautifully. I don't know if you've ever seen it, but her acid trip on fire, really. And it's all real fire. There's no CGI at all.
Okay. That's like, number one. What's number two?
That two is, I directed a film years ago called The Pyramid. And it's not gotten any, it's sort of a magical, mystical film. It was my first real film directing. I directed it in Dallas in 1973. The film dealt with a reporter working for a TV station who gets tired of all the crap on TV news. And he wants to do something positive. He gets fired for going off on his own and putting in his own little feel-good things on TV. He gets fired. So he decides he's going to do a documentary. Then screw it. I'll do my own. And in that, he interviews real leaders in the consciousness movement of the 60s. What am I talking about? I'm talking about Edgar Mitchell, who was the sixth man to walk on the moon. Thelma Moss, who did Kirlian photography at UCLA, another fellow who worked with plants and worked with lie detectors for the FBI. So I used those real people and had my guy interview them on film, and he had to find them in a variety of places, Northern California, living on a ranch, another guy living in a cave, this kind of thing, so that the film grows. As he, I won't go on and on, but it just, and it's about what happens to him in the course of doing all these things.
So is it, anyway, it's like a fictional film with like a real documentary in it?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Wow. That's it. And the guys, we opened it in Dallas years ago and it did really well, played 13 weeks in Houston, Texas, primarily because Ed Mitchell was in it. But it did very well in its original opening, only the distributor was cooking the books. So I took the film back from him. We went to court. It took a year, but I finally got the film back.
Jesus.
I'm telling you this just because it's kind of magical. I finally got it back, but I was out of money.
Sorry,
so
are you saying we should
go do a stunt?
Gary, are you saying we should pirate that one? Or you
yes.
Could... Yeah, pirate that.
You know, it just sold after all these years of sitting in my garage. The Alamo Theater just sold it to Turner Classic Movies.
Wow.
So now this film that I made years ago is finally going to get on a pretty good venue.
That's exciting. That's okay, number three, Gary. What's the third one?
Number three is a little picture I did with Isai Morales called Rainy Day Friends. And we just had a gas. We tore up L.A. with that film.
Isai.
And from all kinds of viewpoints.
I recognized him in the documentary. He's the guy from Ozark, Travis. You remember the bad guy from the first season of Ozark?
Oh, yeah.
It's that guy.
Oh, nice.
I like that guy. That guy is great. Sorry to cut
Isai
you off.
Isai Morales?
Yeah, he was in the first season of Ozark. It's a Netflix show.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah. That's Isai. He's a good actor. I got him just as he was turning like 21. and he was all over the place. He was just willing to do anything. He was such a good actor. You had to control him because he'd give you too much, which is what a director really wants.
Right.
You know, they would rather tone you down than have to get something out of you you don't want to give.
Gary, so,
yeah, Isai was a gas.
You were the stunt coordinator on one of my all-time favorite cult flicks. You worked on Bubba Hotep for Don Coscarelli?
Absolutely, yeah, yeah,
that's amazing. It had to be crazy working with him, too, because I know he's always, like, a true independent filmmaker, so everything he makes is, like, on a schedule and probably under-budgeted and whatever, but that is one of my all-time favorite flicks.
Oh, good. I'm glad you like it. Yeah, that was a gas, making that film. We had a lot of fun. It's kind of trying, too, because so much of it was night shooting.
Right.
And night shooting is always harder than day shooting, as you know.
Of course. Well, it had to be great to work. Did you get to work with Ozzie Davis then?
Yes, and I love that guy.
Yeah, me too.
I had lunch with him every time we had lunch. Ozzie would sit by himself, and I would come over and say, do you mind if I sit here? And he'd say, no, and I would sit and have this great talk. No one else would bother to go over and sit with him. And I thought, he's just eating lunch all by himself. Maybe he would like someone to talk to. And he did. I did the same thing with Boris Karloff on a movie I did called Targets.
Oh.
And for Bogdanovich. But I would go and sit with Boris Karloff. And I thought, here I am sitting with this man who is an icon. He's a legend. And we're sitting there eating lunch talking about flowers. I mean, it's just amazing, this business part.
Yeah, just looking at your credits, I mean, you've had an amazing career. I'm sure you couldn't even fit all of your stories in a book or in a documentary or even to sit down with us long form and talk about it. It seems like you've had a pretty amazing time.
I've been lucky, very lucky, guys.
Guys, the documentary is called Danger God. It's going to be out on DVD September 17th. It's on video on demand now. It's all about the storied life of Gary Kent. Gary, we appreciate you spending some time with us tonight. It was an honor talking to you. We should do
well. Thank you for having me on, guys. I had a lot of fun.
Thanks, Gary.
Thanks a lot, Gary.
Take care.
Take care.
You as well.
Well, guys, I mean,
we went around the world with that show. I feel like this episode is jam-packed.
Wow. Wow.
You were right when at the top of the show you said we had quite the show for everybody tonight.
Sometimes I'm fibbing, but I would
we should do a podcast with Gary every week for the next 2 years.
Gary's 86 years old, Travis. He's still going out there making movies.
Still doing it. Still doing it. That's when I looked it up and I saw that he worked on Bubba Hotep. It's like, man, this guy has been all over the place.
Yeah, he was Jack Nicholson's stunt double on like 8 or 9 movies. Like Jack just kept calling him like, hey, I like what you do. Come back and make another cowboy movie with me. The guy's
just to say, oh, I sat with Bela Lugosi and had conversations with Bela Lugosi. It's like, oh Christ.
Don't you feel like
amazing?
Yeah, you just want to sit around. And that's, I'm telling you, that's what the documentary is, Travis. If you enjoyed this conversation, check out the documentary. Because, I mean, like, whoever directed that fucking thing just turned the camera on and said, all right, Gary, go.
I mean, I'll definitely check it out.
Yeah, they pull a lot of clips from his movies and stuff. And that's why. That's why I asked him, you know, what the ones we should check out are, because, I mean, like, they were showing clips of all these movies. Like, these movies look fucking crazy. Because, I mean, like, basically, they would cast him as a bad guy. And like, you know, all the bad guys were stuntmen. And, like, you know, they'd come out with their knives and be like, I'm going to cut you. And then, like, you know, they'd take a big fall because the hero would punch him in the face.
Of course.
And so, yeah, I mean, like, he was just a bad guy in, like, everything. Like, if you see Gary in a movie, he's probably a bad guy. All the clips and stuff they were showing from all these old B-movies and stuff were fucking crazy. It was quite a lot, so.
Wow.
Travis, pick of the week, I guess? Pick of the week, right?
Travis's pick of the week this week, I assumed it was going to be Dragged Across Concrete. I picked that movie up from the director of Brawl in Cell Block 99 and... the rest is blanket. All his movies have been great and kind of wacky exploitation flicks. Picked it up at Target this weekend for $10, and I was going to watch it last night,
until I turned it over and saw that it was like 3 hours long.
It's really long. So long. That's what's kept me from watching it, Travis, is because it's so long.
So my pick of this
Bone
week
is Tomahawk.
That's the other one, I love
more than anything.
So Travis's pick of the week this week is I'm still neck deep in my Entourage binge. So Vinny Chase and the Boys is my pick of the week.
Matt, pick of the week. I mean, Matt, that was a fun show, right?
Oh my God, guys! Gary, shit, fucking great.
We just need to call Gary back next week, right?
You know, yeah. I just like there was so much that he was kind of just open with and talking about.
Matt was texting me all the names of these movies. I think Matt's ready to have a Gary movie night.
Yeah, I want to check out a couple of these Gary movies, especially when he's talking about the fire and you know what they wanted to do, and just you know it's a different time, obviously, and you know the fact they did it without CGI and how exciting that must have been. Like you could hear him talking about that stuff and how excited he was to kind of make what the director wanted come true. You know, like right now. Do they have that type of excitement when they're just like, oh, yeah, I'll just put it in the program.
We'll add the gorilla later.
Yeah, look at the tennis ball and pretend that's something.
He's like, I got to figure this out.
You just pull up his IMDb and there's no way you could capture all the stories that this man has to have.
And how can you even pass up the Charles Manson shit that he was talking about? Like, he was right there.
I wanted to get to that Charles Manson shit early, Matt. Because those stories are amazing. Like it, and you know, it wasn't in the documentary, but I saw something else where he was talking about like he met Quentin and told him those stories. And I mean, like those stories made it into that movie, man.
Yeah.
You see Brad Pitt's character in that movie. That character is based on him in a lot of ways. I mean, like, you know, Gary told him those stories and then Quentin started writing that night.
You know what? I'm going to say Gary and his movies, Psych Out, The Pyramid, Rainy Day Friends. Check one of those out this weekend. Check out the podcast from Connor. I was really surprised. Mike, I was dreading listening to a podcast just because I'm like, I've got too much on my plate as far as podcast goes that I didn't want to add anything else to my rotation.
I don't recommend stuff to you that often.
I agree with Matt, though. I felt the same way. It's like, man, another podcast. I have so many podcasts as it is. And I listened today and immediately was intrigued. He told the story and it's like this show could go in so many different directions and spin off into so many different things while he's conducting this investigation into this role that he was fired from 20 years ago. And I love the show.
I don't want to give it away, but the actor that shows up at the end of the first episode,
St. Louis's favorite son.
So great, man. It's just so fun. And you hear this actor show up and you're like, wow.
Oh, yeah, right. Like out of nowhere.
Especially in the capacity that the actor shows up in. You're like, what? This is how this person shows up? So I recommend, Dead Eyes. Really, really good show. And then check out one of Gary's movies.
God, this is all one show. Man, we spoil you guys. I'll tell you what. I mean, yeah, we spoil them, Travis, don't we? We spoil them.
I feel like we really do. Mike, did you have a pick of the week?
Travis, pick of the week. You know, I'm going to a rock and roll concert next week, guys. I'm going and seeing the Smashing Pumpkins. Opening for the Smashing Pumpkins is Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds, which I dismissed initially. And I just said, Noel Gallagher has nothing to offer me. But I listened to his most recent album. I enjoyed it, man. It's pretty good. You should check it out. You should, if you haven't yet.
You know, after I listened to the other Gallagher's song, I was checking out Noel Gallagher. And yeah, you're right. Good shit.
The new album, it's very dancey, man. You know what I'm saying? It's got dance vibes to it. So, guys, we're not live next week. There will be a podcast. We appreciate all of you. We'll We'll catch you on down the trail. Take care. Guys, thanks for joining us on this edition of the Wheelbarrow Full of Dicks Internet Radio Program. If you enjoyed it, subscribe on whatever podcast player you're listening to this right now. That way you don't miss the next one. You get them all. Guys, reach out to us. We're on Instagram, Facebook, Twitter, at WFO Dicks. Email the show, Mike, Travis, Drunk, or Matt at WFODshow.com. Guys, leave us a voicemail, 636-487-HAND. Thanks, as always, to our Patreon sponsors, Liquid Lozenge, Brian Kranz. If you'd like to be a Patreon sponsor, it's patreon.com/WFODicks. As we'll see you next week, we appreciate it. Guys, reach out to our guests. Tell them you heard them here. Tell them you enjoyed what you heard. It helps. It helps us. Thanks. Bye.
Lots of good stuff happening. It's going to be juicy. You'll see. All right. Bye for now. Take good care of yourself. Bye.
Mr. Ugosi, I know you're very busy, but can I have your autograph?
Certainly.
You know which movie of yours I love, Mr. Lugosi? The Invisible Ray. You were great as Karloff's sidekick.
Karloff? Sidekick? Fuck you! Karloff does not deserve to smell my shit! That limey cocksucker can rot in hell for all I care!
What happened?
How dare that asshole bring up Karloff? You think it takes talent to play Frankenstein? It's all makeup and grunting.
Bella, I agree 100%. Now, Dracula, that's a role that requires talent.
Of course. Dracula requires presence. It's all in the eyes and the voice and the hand.
That's right. That's right. You seem a little agitated. You want to go outside and get some air?
Bullshit. I'm ready now. Roll the camera.